listening to the Cricket Podcast.
I think it was a disgraceful performance, and I think it should never be permitted to happen again.
That is very good.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cricket Podcast, where we are joined. I'm going to lead straight in with it. We're joined after a long hiatus of him doing his actual job by Dan Weston. How are you, Dan?
Yeah, I'm good, Max. How are you?
Yes, very well. Very well. Thanks for joining us. Also here is Ross Legg. Ross, how are you? How's your day been?
I'm just so proud of our budding analyst. You know, he's boy done good.
Yeah, he's a useful man to know as well, because my friends were asking me about Aaron Hardy and whether he was any good, the self-styled, according to Surrey, highly rated Australian player who's just been signed for the Blast. And I obviously was just like, Dan, Aaron Hardy, talk to me. apparently it's good news. So all things looking continually positive for Surrey. But we're not here to talk about Surrey, as much as I'd love to sit here forever. We're here to talk about England. We're here to talk about Bazball, or the McStokes approach, as Ross has just dubbed it, the new era of Test cricket, and also Owen Morgan's retirement, which he announced as expected today on the 28th of June as we record. So Ross and I will be looking back in eulogy at Owen Morgan's impact on the England side and his achievements, and Dan will be here to provide controversial critique of our of our opinions. For all that, obviously, the usual messages. Head over to Twitter and Instagram at the Cricket Pod to get in touch with us there. Like and subscribe to us on YouTube on this video. Spotify, rate us on Spotify. We haven't done that for a while. Give us a lovely 5 stars. I don't know where we're sitting at the moment, but I think we've got a good number of views in there, so let's keep those coming. And patreon.com/thecricketpod. For various goodies over there. We've got another Patreon special show coming up soon, so head over there to check out what's going on. Right, Ross, where are we starting?
Well, McStokes. Let's start with the Dan. What did you call it off air? The secret McDonald's menu entry.
Yeah. I wonder if it's available as an extra value meal. Maybe I don't know.
Quite possibly. You eat it quite aggressively.
It's
it comes out
fast,
to you quite aggressively.
Super fast food.
Yeah. We have sat before, Dan, many times during the Silverwood and Root era, and around what their approach was, and their typical approach was almost minimizing the opportunity to lose, right? They were trying to extend the opportunity to draw and try to minimize the amount of the moments in the game, or the percentage in the game that they could possibly lose that test match. You think of things like the Dentury, where Joe Denley was there to hit not runs, just to survive 100 deliveries. Dom Sibley's approach that we saw, where it just genuinely just decided not to score any runs, just to occupy the crease. And McCullum has come in with Stokes, and they've gone completely the opposite direction, Dan. They've gone full maximising the opportunity to win. What do you make of this after 3 games? Do you think it can be a sustainable approach?
Yes, those questions are so good, but difficult to answer at the same time. I remember sitting in my hotel room in Leeds last year during the 100, watching a test match. I think it was a test match between England and New Zealand, where England just didn't want to chase a seemingly chaseable score, and they just shut up shop, and it kind of that turns off viewers, both on TV and in the crowd, when you have that approach. And I think just purely, and I've said this a lot about T20 as well, for me, in T20, an aggressive approach is not just a winning approach, but it's also an approach which maximises entertainment and crowds, and sort of, yeah, just getting people to buy into that identity that you've got. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one clear positive of the McCullum reign anyway. You know, if you look at it like a football team, I remember, I support Spurs, you support Spurs, Ross, as well. I'm a little bit older than you, but you might remember the Ozzy Ardiles era when he was coach. And you know, if you score 4, we'll score 5. And I mean, yeah, we with some incredible games, some hidings we gave out to opposition. Sometimes the opposition gave us hidings as well. But you couldn't say that it wasn't interesting. And I do think that if you have that mentality and you lose, the supporters and the media tend to give you a little bit more time than if you're Villas Boas, for example, and be extremely boring and lose 1-0 on a lot of games without a shot on target or whatever it was. And then the critics are out very, very quickly. And so I do think having that identity is important. Do I think that it's sustainable? Well, I think that, you know, if you do this in India away, you might get a bloody nose or two. I think it's going to be tough to sustain those conditions. But that just sort of selective aggression, I do really like it. And it's certainly a more imposing on the opposition and makes them worry about it rather than, you know, playing a load of four defensives, scoring 25, 30 off 100 balls and you haven't really advanced the scoreboard. You are kind of screwing with the opposition to some degree. Now, the other aspect of it is whether you think that there's like a new manager bounce, if you like. Now, I'm going to be really honest with you here. I'm really firmly of the view that if Root was captain and Silva was coach, and this 11 or these 11s that have been picked in the three matches against New Zealand so far, if that was the case, but they were coach and captain, England would not have won this 3-0. Mm-hmm. I think the new broom has really, really made a big difference. I'm not saying that it's necessarily because they're tactical geniuses. I think it's just the kind of environment that they've created. And I think that cricketers do thrive in those positive environments where they're backed, where they're kind of supported for taking an attacking approach without repercussions, if you like. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and I know that for sure, one of the cricketers that I know, they like feeling valued in that environment where they can go out, play their natural game and not be criticised if they play one rash shot and get out, as long as they're doing it for the right reasons. And I think that kind of change in mentality has been a real positive for England. The other thing I was going to say about it as well, I mean, I haven't really tweeted about this, but it's an interesting thought. You know, as far as I'm aware, under McCullum and also Matthew Mott, the white ball coach, England are unbeaten so far. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they might have some tougher opposition to play, but they're unbeaten. So did we need this review of the county championship after all?
Yeah, well, it's the double manager bounce. That's what Spurs haven't yet tried. They haven't put two managers in charge at the same time. But we'll see what we can do that. And I'm very much up for a cricket podcast, a Spurs podcast mashup. But maybe another time.
I'll recuse myself from that one.
We should have done it when Tim Sherwood was manager, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. All got matching gilets. Yeah. Max, you said on the podcast last night when we were talking about, we were reviewing New Zealand versus England's test match around the scoring rate and actually how England aren't allowing the opposition to bring the new ball into contention. Do you want to expand on a little bit more on that with Dan here?
Yeah, so I mean, it was in reaction to how we responded to being... basically having our top order completely blown away from us once again. You know, that's not a new situation for England to find themselves in. But what was new was what it Bairstow and Jamie Overton did in response, and Ben Stokes, in fairness, for his very brief stay at the crease where he started charging Neil Wagner immediately. And it was, I was like everyone immediately looking at it, thinking, what on earth is going on? What are they doing? This is insane. And then with the benefit of it working perfectly, it maybe enlightened me as to what the point of it is. And, you know, in your normal situation of trying to reconsolidate yourself after losing your top order and trying to regroup and just bat through a bit, you might get yourself another 100 runs, but you're still, you know, 150, 200 runs behind by the time the new ball comes in and you get ripped through once again with the tail exposed. But in this case, what they've done is they've taken the opportunity of a slightly older ball scoring as many runs as they can in the hope that they can catch up the game, because realistically that's what they needed to do, right? Catch the game up. And they used the best opportunity that they had available to score runs to do just that. And it meant that by the time the new ball came around, they'd already caught up. And it gave them a better chance of winning the game than another approach might have done. And I likened it to sort of the T20 approach of you're 80 for six with six overs to go. You might as well keep trying to hit the ball and get yourself to a score that might actually win the game. And yeah, you might get completely flattened and get bowled for 90. But your chances of winning the game are higher doing that than they are the conventional way, the way that conventional wisdom of batting the overs would have you do. So I thought it was a really interesting approach. And that was my insight into why they might have done it. I don't know if that is, you know, 100% the case, but it seemed entirely logical to me. It's just I'm looking forward to the days when it completely blows up in our face and everyone's screaming at the TV.
And Dan, do we see that in, does that come into the equation when you're thinking around county championship tactics? Because we have seen some high scoring quick games recently. Mm-hmm. So is that thinking within the county game at the moment?
Possibly. I mean, it could be a factor that players coming through the system now are much more in tune with that T20 mindset, shot options. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of becoming more accustomed to scoring quickly. I think this year the pitches as well, and the ball perhaps isn't as bowler friendly as it has been in recent years.
We've accidentally ended up with a Kookaburra after all.
Yeah, have kind of contributed to this high run rate in county cricket as well. You know, sub three might have been good before, but it's probably a bit higher. The bench might be a little bit higher this season,
yeah,
because of economy rates. And the other thing as well, I mean, I like this style from England in just purely because if you're going to have ambition to be the best team in the world, which I think England should have, even though they're patently not the best team in the world right now. Then having this aggressive approach where you're looking to bat for runs rather than bat for time minimises your chances of drawing a match, but also maximises your chances of winning and losing a match. But if you're the better team, you should be wanting to maximise your chances of winning the match, and this does that. So if you're the underdogs in the match, you want to bat time. If you're the favourites in a match, you want to go pedal to the metal.
Mm-hmm. And I think when it comes to that, Dan, like we've seen at the start of this test series, the uproar over the Lord's ticket prices, which in the middle of a cost of living crisis or a cost of conservative living prices, depending which way you swing, you can tell which one I swing to. Fuck them all. but when it comes to getting people into the ground, like people want to go and see this, right? The people who were there and Trent Bridge and Headingley, they made it free or very cheap on the last day and on day fours. Like this was was fantastic to watch. And everybody I knew, regardless if they are cricket fans or not, had seen the highlights or tuned in to watch what was happening in Test cricket. Is there a wider ramification in terms of Red Bull cricket? Anyway, like Brendan McCullum came out and pretty much said as much, saying it's our duty almost to play it in a more exciting way. Mm-hmm. And the work that you've done at Leicestershire, so maybe not you directly, but in terms of ticket prices and making it more accessible to local communities, etc., this does seem to be a trend. So if you've got a Red Bull team that is really exciting, I think that can only benefit the county game of encouraging more people to come along because they want to be a part of that spectacle, right?
100%. So there's also the argument that if you're going to get 1,000 people to a game charging 20 quid a ticket, you're better off getting 2,000 people and charging a tenner because then you've got the same income, but you've also got more food and beverage sales. And you've also got more people hopefully enjoying the products who are going to come back again and be repeat customers. And I know Leicester now, I think you can get T20 tickets for a tenner, which is, I think, the cheapest in the country. And that's not you've got to buy it as a season ticket. That's you can buy it, I think, the day of the match online or the day before the match online. Like it's not difficult to do. And I think that's definitely shown a surge in the crowd attendances. And the players as well, they react to full houses. They want to be supported. They don't want to play in front of quarter full or half full venues. They want to be playing in front of packed houses. And I do think that cricket has one, as McCullum said, you mentioned McCullum saying about the duty to entertain, but it also has a duty to, I think, to bring through the next generation of spectators who at this point in time probably are affected by the cost of living crisis as much as anybody, if not more than most. So, you know, people who are under sort of 30, even under 40, are probably very affected right now by this cost of living crisis. And they're the people that we need to get interested in the game as future spectators of it and the future fans, and the future players, and, you know, whatever it is.
Dan, switching gears a little bit to focus on the data side, so because obviously you are the data guru. Stokes came out, and I'm not sure how to kind of take this statement, but I'm just going to read it out and see what you think. But I think these last three games should have sent a message to people who aspire to play Test cricket for England over the next 2 or 3 years. I would say it's the manner that you're going to play, whether the ball or bat in hand, not necessarily your stats or anything like that. It's going to be the manner you play in that's going to be first and foremost on selectors' minds. So are we to take that as England are going to have a bit of a hybrid approach to the data and the eye test? Or is that Stokes coming out and saying, actually, the eye test actually is going to matter more than the stats?
It's a good question, because he's talking about kind of sort of required skills for selection without the head of selectors actually being in place for the job yet. So I don't know if Ben Stokes is going to be captain and head of selectors at the same time. but to me, yeah, you talk about stats versus that. Well, actually, you can find players who tick both boxes. And I think that's a key. So, for example, we flip it back to T20 again, right? Now, there's players in T20 cricket who I think everyone would say they're good players.
Yeah.
Would I recruit them for a T20 team? No, I wouldn't, because they don't play that positive style that I want in T20 cricket as well. So, again, I'll be using stats, but also more so the stats that I feel are important for my identity and the way I think the game should be played, which I also think is mathematically proven to be a winning approach as well. I will disregard players who are clearly good players, but perhaps have a penchant for chewing up a few balls at the start of their innings, shall we say.
So is that the end of Dom Sibley's Test career while Stokes is around then?
Well, I mean, this is it. I mean, it does kind of draw a line through quite a few players if you're going to have that as a really stringent selection criteria.
Yeah, the Joe Denley meme team on Twitter aren't going to be happy, are they? There's no route back for Joe.
Not that one, anyway.
Max, we've got a question over from Discord, and I think it's kind of for both of us around. With the new mindset of attack positivity, how is this going to impact selection? So, which I think we've just around covered. This is from Larn, by the way. But who should be England's next opening batsman in this team once Crawley inevitably fails again?
Mm. Well, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because Crawley's like the archetypal kind of player that Ben Stokes would want in that side. He's the guy you're looking for if he's good enough. And if he's not good enough to do it, then it's a tricky one. Obviously, the guys that have sort of been around the county sphere so far have been the likes of Burns and Sibley, and they're not really in that mold, are they? So it's a tricky one. I just sincerely hope we don't go down the route, like we said yesterday, of picking someone who's not an opener to do it because they have that skill set.
Yeah, we said yesterday, Dan, that Josh Butler opening the batting is a bad idea.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, go and get a load of runs in county cricket, then we'll talk.
So, Dan, who do you think will be in there? Or do you think that Lees and Crawley are they're going to be there for a little while?
I'm not sure that there's anyone who's markedly better than Lees as an opener in county cricket right now. there's players in county cricket who have done well, but perhaps they don't fit into that positive style of play mantra.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd also lean towards Div 1 players rather than guys who've scored a lot of runs in Div 2, because there is quite a big standard, I think, between the two divisions,
yeah,
particularly the teams at the top of Div 1. I saw Burns scored a load of quick runs the other night in T20 Max, so maybe he's kind of auditioning for the new version.
Yeah, that'll be the 10 injuries that Surrey have got to their T20 side, and they still manage. they're still putting out people like Rory Burns. It's ridiculous.
So on that front, so when it comes to Crawley is an interesting one, but it looks like England will adopt the Verinder Sehwag and Matthew Hayden type, kind of, we want to dominate from the outset. In some of these conditions, though, is there not a thing to say, actually, we need to get through the new ball and we need people with good enough techniques to actually try and combat, say, Trent Bolt, right? Trent Bolt's spell, yeah, when he ripped through the England top order, was really good. However, Ollie Pope's technique and Zach Crawley's technique for those two dismissals, you could say was not good enough. And that's not saying I would play that any better as a right-handed batsman as well. But if you are a professional cricketer, look at the runs that, say, Alistair Cook has scored against top level bowling at lineup. Is there a case to be said of having some solid people at the top, not the kind of Ferraris at the top, to then allow number 3, 4, 5, 6 to actually bat in the way in which they want to bat?
I lean towards that, actually. I don't have a massive problem with that at all. If you can get through, so I don't know, let's say first 20, 24 overs of the opposition being none down, but, you know, 55 for naught of 24 or something like that, not great scoring rate, but you haven't lost a wicket. You've also seen off the new ball. You've also got the first spell out of the way for all four of the opening and first change bowlers as well. So they're going to be more fatigued. And it does set that platform for players to come in and theoretically, you know, take the game to the opposition as the innings progresses. And I've got no issue with that at all, actually. Does seem that England want to go maybe in a little bit of a different direction. But bash
the ball into a softness as fast as you can.
Then
it's not a 10-over opening spell, 20-over opening spell. It's just a 10-over opening spell.
The other thing as well is in a 5-test series, there's probably a lot of positive aspects to putting overs in bowlers' legs rather than, you know, maybe it's better to be 350 all out in 110 overs as opposed to 350 all out in 80 overs.
Mm.
And those 30 overs difference will add up and add up and add up through the series, and then eventually you're playing against a pretty broken bowling attack by the end of it.
Final question, I think, on McStoke's section before we move on to the future of England cricket, or white ball cricket, as Owen Morgan's retired. Outside Off on Twitter has asked, probably an obvious one, but which white ball players could potentially come into this side?
I'm not massive. Anyone who's kind of read a lot of the stuff that I've written over the years, and probably I've spoken about on here as well, probably will be aware that I'm not much of an advocate of cross-format selection where it's not justified. Mm-hmm. So I want someone to be performing in red ball cricket as an entity, as a separate entity, rather than, all right, yeah, so he's doing great in ODIs or T20s or whatever, and let's throw him in. So probably the obvious player that I think probably does tick all those boxes is Harry Brook,
mm-hmm,
who's obviously an excellent white ball player, but has scored a ton of runs in red ball cricket this season as well. So I think that's probably one player that stands out.
You're not chucking Livingston in?
No, I'd rather hit over Phoenix in the hundreds. I said earlier about the Butler stuff. I mean, like, how can a player come back into the England team after being dropped when they haven't played county cricket? It just makes zero sense to me.
Yeah, Yeah, we had one other question on Twitter from Cricket Pig, who asked, is an aggressive middle order in tests better complemented by aggressive or classical openers? I think we kind of answered that one, but just to so Owen Morgan, Dan, we've talked before around potentially his T20 record not being quite, or his T20 captaincy not being quite up to scratch in the last kind of couple of years. However, there is no doubt that the impact that he has made on white ball cricket in England. He's obviously got two World Cups to his name. He's got the most ODI runs for England, most T20 runs for England, most sixes in both formats. And he's also provided us with the best final of all time and the best cricket match, I think, of all time. It's fair to say when England just got over the line by the barest of margins against New Zealand, alongside the, his obliteration of Afghanistan when it was 17 sixes in just 71 balls. The thing he might be remembered most of, though, is his ability to wear multiple hats, literally multiple hats. But that's the way it is. In terms of Owen Morgan's legacy, and Max, I think we'll start with you. The guy's totemic, isn't he? He's the best thing that's happened since, well, I don't know, sliced bread for the English for the England team.
Oh, he should be remembered, I think, as a legend of England white ball cricket. You read the numbers. You know, he's played 248 one-day internationals. That's an obscene number of games to have played. And he took England from, you know, that, you remember that tournament in 2016 where we were just embarrassing and just turned everything around. Following the blueprint of McCullum and taking that way of playing and instilling a new culture in England's white ball cricket. I think that was a really interesting thing that Moeen Ali said when sort of the news was coming out that Morgan was probably going to step down, about the number of times he heard people say after holing out onto the boundary, I should have just hit a single. And Owen Morgan's response was, no, next time just hit it out the ground. And that's exactly the kind of atmosphere and approach that England were trying to instill in their players. And it's what got them to the position they are as a white ball team now. And he's got to be lauded for that. And I also have a lot of respect for him doing it now in kind of unglamorous circumstances. You know, two ducks against the Netherlands and a groin strain and going, you know what? I'm done. He could have clung on and tried to lead England to one last T20 World Cup. And it could have gone wrong. We've seen a number of times people do that sort of thing. You know, just there's one more tournament I can do, and it'll be a nice way to go out. You know, Graham Swann, and I'd go for that one last Ashes series when really he knew his heart wasn't in it. Mm. Ended up retiring halfway through, in the middle of a dreadful tour. And you just think, good on him for recognizing that the time was up and that it was the right time for him to step down. And I think that speaks to him as a team player and how much of a team ethos he managed to instill for England.
Dan, how responsible is Owen Morgan for creating these white ball monsters so that England do possess?
That is a question I think that no one really knows the answer to. So I don't think that there's much doubt that he was influential in creating this mentality where England were going to play ultra positive, ultra attacking white ball cricket. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he might have inherited that mentality from his close friend McCullum to start with. So perhaps it wasn't his original idea, if that makes sense. But you're right. I mean, similar to what you said earlier about him, hit it out of the ground better next time rather than hit it for a single. That's my mentality as well. So, you know, a lot of the time, a player will get caught on a boundary, but they're taking on the right option at that time, and I'll be like, well, fair play, just got to execute it better next time. That is the key, rather than, you know, taking the more defensive option. So the question is that whether England's white ball team is so stacked with good players that has been over the last few years that Do we know that whether Joss Butler, for example, would have done an equivalent job as captain, or perhaps even better job as captain? We don't know, because we haven't got that to compare to yet. So I guess what I'm trying to say is it's not easier to captain a team which are absurdly talented than a team that aren't so talented. And my question is as well, is that domestically, when he's been captain, Morgan actually hasn't really pulled up any trees. So I think obviously, yeah, it would be ridiculous to say that he hasn't done a good job as captain. But I also would say that I would stop short of calling him some genius, which I think pretty much everyone's saying today.
Well, so I think there's probably a bit at the the cultural aspect. So when it comes to English cricket, you've seen what a dumpster fire the ECB can be at times. And I think being able to go from being in the Irish setup and go through the county game and then coming into that, I think it was a bit of a trailblazer. And I think that's the thing that probably should be celebrated. I think there was a little bit for me that the way in which he went around leading showed the I want to say class of the man, but the makeup of the man. I still think there are some bits which is quite unforgiving. I think trust is clearly a massive impact, importance to him. Just look at how he dealt with the Alex Hales situation and continued to deal with it. But then if you look on the other side of that coin around the trust element is the inclusion and diversity of the likes of Adil Rashid and Moeen Ali. And to a greater extent, Chris Jordan as well, around actually how many teams would put their love and trust in those players and almost build a team kind of around them and create that environment which they could actually perform in, week out. And I think that is a testament to having faith in those players, faith to see them through tough periods, and also to change the opinion of English cricket. Like, English cricket has got, there's no doubt about it, has had a systemic problem with racism the whole way through, since I've been growing up, since before that's happened. And we've talked about the Azeem Rafiq scandal on one of our previous podcasts. Having a captain like Morgan who protects what is right in the world is leadership that hasn't really been seen, especially in the most in recent years. So I think that is the bit that I probably take away from it, alongside his great cricketing achievements, but the aura of the person around that culture. I think that's the bit that I think they should be trying to drive to celebrate. Yeah, quite not perhaps, yeah, he was a genius T20 captain or tactician. I'm not quite on that bit.
Yeah, I agree with that, yeah.
Max, we've seen him be a bit of an innovator, I think, over the years, including when he was in South Africa and the Ready Steady Cook peppers and stuff like that were coming up from the Lemon Man, putting on the thing, the coded messages for yeah. his data. Just to what extent, Max, do you think, and Dan, we'll definitely come to you on this one in a second, but around the introduction of data analysis into kind of that elite level, and actually trusting what was said, because captaincy historically was gut feel, fuck off, leave me alone, I know what I'm doing. He opened that up to a certain extent. Is that fair to say?
I think so. I think he put it more to the forefront of what what we saw as watchers of cricket and spectators. I obviously haven't been on the inside, so I don't know the ins and outs of what's changed and what hasn't. But there's certainly a sense, especially with having Lehman around and that kind of thing, that England are more into the data than they were in the past, and that can only be a good thing.
Dan, would that be your feeling as well on the matter?
Yeah, to a large degree, and I think this is probably an area where I would give Morgan more credit than perhaps in some other areas in terms of that sort of genius captaincy debate, is that, I know a lot of cricketers, some are captains, some are not, and you do get a very mixed bag in terms of captains who want to understand and utilise data. And he clearly was a early proponent of doing so. And that was clearly in his plans, certainly over the last few years. And I think that he has to be applauded for that, because still there's a lot of captains out there now who are rather reticent to use data for sure.
We've got a couple of questions to answer. I think let's stay on captaincy for now. When it comes to the captaincy, and this is probably Test cricket and T20 cricket, we've talked before, Dan, that the weighting on white ball captaincy is relatively limited. Do you see the same for Test cricket? And what's the weighting you kind of could potentially apply for T20, ODI and Test match in terms of a captain's impact?
I think a captain's impact is critical in all formats. A lot of people will say, oh, you don't need detailed analytics in red ball cricket. I completely disagree. I think that there's a great deal that you can do in terms of planning and even matchup stuff in red ball cricket that a lot of people aren't doing right now that can get you some pretty significant marginal gains. So, look, if you've got it available to you, use it. It's as simple as that. I would say that it's a mandatory aspect of all three formats.
Okay. And then who replaces him? So it looks like Joss Butler is going to be the heir apparent. He's obviously been the vice captain. Would that have been your choice for that? Or there's a risk, as Prabal points out on Twitter, that you might burden him? Owen Morgan doesn't seem to see it that way.
I don't know Joss personally, so it's difficult for me to comment on whether I think he'll do a good job or not. But, he's vice captain, he's a senior player. He seems also very calm, and also similar in what you were saying on Ross earlier about being a good person who can keep up that positive culture in the group as well. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of positives for him. Also, he'll set that aggressive style, playing style in terms of his batting. That's his benchmark, so he's leading by example as well. Mm-hmm. So I think he's probably the best fit out of the lot. And the thing is, to me, like, a lot of people saying, when we talked about Redness Poppet, a lot of people still talk about on social media about him going back into Test squad. I think now is the time to say, you're an incredible white ball player. Here's the captaincy. Do your best in this for the rest of your career.
Yeah,
don't worry about playing longer format.
Just like they did with Morgan, eh? Brilliant. Okay, and thank you very much to Ben, Thomas and Rye for similar questions around captaincy. Very much appreciate you interacting with the show. Dan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, as always. And I think my only bit around this is that no doubt you were a fan of Football Manager once upon a time.
100%.
And I think my sign-off for Owen Morgan is that when Owen Morgan plays Football Manager, he goes straight to the tactic screen and set the mentality to overload or all out attack. And I think that's the biggest compliment I can pay the man. So, I think it's a great career. And I think, England is in a better position because of his influence. And I think at the moment, England look to be in a position both in the red ball setup and the white ball setup at a period of quite an exciting bit. I mean, one, we are clearly one of the world's best, if not the world best, in ODI cricket. We are consistently challenging in the T20 sphere for that top space. And when it's such a high variance game, that's a fantastic place to be in. And red ball cricket, we are fucking rubbish for 2 years. And now we're in a position where who knows what might happen. And I think that can only be good for England, could only be good for the county game. And very much happy with where things are right this moment. I might completely change my tune when we get absolutely obliterated by India and I'm sat there at Edgbaston on Saturday going through it, but who knows?
It'll be fun whichever way it goes though, won't it? You know that much.
Exactly. Dan, where can they find you, our beloved listeners?
On Twitter, @SAAdvantage is a way to get in touch with me. And if you've got some time to spare, a lot of time to spare, danweston.substack.com. Thanks for having me on, as usual, guys. It's been brilliant.